First communicator, Leslie Flint's guide, Mickey. Second communicator, Stephen Ward.
Was recorded on January 20th, 1965. Medium Leslie Flint.
Oh, oh, we're all right. I trust you're all right.
I don't think you are all right. Are you? You've got a cold, Auntie Rose.
Well, yes.
You're getting over it, are you?
It's better than it was, dear.
Oh, that's good, ain't it? You've been watching pictures.
Yes.
Well, I saw the projector thing up, you know. I thought perhaps you'd be having a film show.
You didn't see the picture?
No. I just recently come, but I saw that thing stuck up in the hall.
Yes. Are you able to see a picture?
By concentration, yes. Hard concentration, yes.
Oh.
You have to concentrate very hard to see what's going on all the time on your side.
Oh.
It's a matter of willpower, you know, sort of willing oneself to enter into the conditions and... You know, really concentrating hard to hold it.
Oh.
That's the trouble. Not so bad perhaps for some, but it's very difficult for others. They may see some, but not all. You know what I mean?
It's
very difficult to explain, but the harder you can concentrate to get into a certain condition and hold it, then of course it's all right. The thing is holding it, to retain it. That's why, of course, sittings are always rather inclined to be fragmentary, you know.
Yes.
Somebody was speaking loud and distinct and sensible, then all of a sudden it'll go off and they've lost the link.
Yes. Oh, I see. It's the concentration.
Well, that is the big problem of communication, of course. That is the main problem.
Yes.
That's why sometimes a person may be concentrating very hard and getting through and getting their personality and their thoughts over. And then perhaps suddenly somebody will say, oh, do you remember so-and-so? Can you tell me so-and-so?
Oh,
and they lose the link and the contact, and they've got to think hard to get onto the vibration and the thought of the thing that they've been asked and try to recapture a memory of long ago, then get back again and then push it over to you see. It's all very difficult.
And my last sitting that we had was most interesting for me. The three of them trying to get into
the
cellar.
Yes, well, it's been a little bit dodgy lately, you know.
Yes.
Well, I think it is partly due to the fact you haven't been too well. I don't think the medium's been up to scratch, really.
No.
And atmosphere has also had something to do with it. There's been a general sort of, well, you know.
Yes.
All these things count, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is the first time I should know. It was the second time. Three of you interrupting each other.
Oh, yes, well...
That's lovely. I love to hear it.
Of course, there again, you see, we're not always sure how much you hear.
Oh.
I mean, we may be saying something as we think, or concentrating, or we may even just be thinking something which has been picked up by the voice box, you know. I mean,
yes.
We might be saying to somebody mentally,
yes.
Oh, get out of the way, you know, I want to do this. And without our realising it, the concentration of our thought, that is the sort of intensity of what we're doing, comes over. We don't intend it to.
Oh, no. Oh, it's lovely. I love it.
Hello, Rosie.
Oh, Stephen.
Hello, how are you?
Hello.
I understand it's your birthday tomorrow, old chap. All the very best. May you live another 50 years.
Oh, goodness me, I don't want to live another 50.
Well, I think it'll be rather interesting, because in 50 years' time, if I can make contact still, I'll be able to come through and talk about things, well, much more advanced than I can at the moment, and I don't know where I'm going to find another medium, as if I can or want to come back in 50 years' time. And you'll probably be over here digging down in the depths, you know.
What do you mean, digging down in the depths?
Well, I mean, I expect you'll do some rescue work or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I don't.
By the time you probably come over here, I should have reached, well, a pretty high degree, I hope. That is, providing you stay on your side for a few more years. But anyway, I don't want you over here yet. None of us do. We want you to get on with the job.
There you are.
Oh, I don't know.
Right.
All this business which I had so long for so often, you know, I didn't realise fully probably at the time, but all this sort of facade and darling this and dear that, I think you're wonderful. All the time they hate your guts, you know.
Yes, that's quite true.
Yeah, it's much better to be honest one now. And even an occasional insult doesn't do any harm. It probably does a bit of good. thing is to know how to take things.
That's
when it's really sincere, then you can appreciate it, even if it hurts a wee bit, it probably
but
does one good.
Human beings are sort of very different one from the other.
Well, in a way, I suppose that's to be expected, probably as well. Otherwise, it would be pretty dreary if everyone's the same. That's the worst of some of these so-called socialites and what have you. It's darling this and dear that, and it's all so very much on the front, on the facade. You know, there's no text to it. You don't really know where you are with those people. Give me a sincere... Mind you, I admit that I've changed in that respect. I was rather taken for a ride many times, actually, but it seems to me that, obviously, the best thing is to really... Well, say what you think and mean it, but do it in a nice way. I think if people have got any character at all, they'll take it.
I know.
Even though sometimes one may, of course, be wrong. I mean, one has to admit the fact that sometimes we can misjudge one another, but generally speaking, if you feel intensely about something, it's just as well to argue for it and get it off your chest. I think you feel a lot better for it.
I know, but I bet you very often done it, haven't you?
Well, I have done it at times, but... I'll be quite frank with you, I think one of my weaknesses was that I didn't really ever like to hurt anyone's feelings.
No.
And secondly, I have to admit this, I'm afraid, I was a bit of a social climber.
You were?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
I was really, Rose. I had to face the opposite.
Why did you do that?
I suppose to some extent I had to. After all, it was business. One had to meet the right people. They would be good clients.
Yes.
And secondly... Well, it opened up doors which otherwise would have been closed too.
Yes.
Still, that's an old story.
Well, most people have to do that.
We all have to do a little bit of kowtowing, don't we, Dan?
Yes, that's quite true.
Unless you're in such a position you don't have to, you've either got to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth and a title, or you've got to have pots of money in the bank, and I had neither, so I did the best I could.
Poor boy, and what you had, you gave away.
It didn't do me any good, did it?
No.
Actually, looking back, I think the happiest times I ever had were... when I was probably not with the so-called right people, but sometimes with the wrong ones.
Oh, sometimes what we think is the right person is quite the wrong one.
Anyway, the whole jolly world's topsy-turvy.
Isn't it? I don't know what's going to happen, Stephen.
Well, frankly, it doesn't even in a sense bear thinking about. I mean, I don't think for a moment that there's going to be any major war or anything like that, but... at the same time, I think the whole world is going to sort of live on the edge of a precipice. And not only that, not only in the wider sense, but in individual lives, one sees it, and in groups and societies, and in fact, every phase of existence, you see ugliness rearing its head.
Yes.
And ugliness in nature or character, and ugliness in art and building, and... it seems to me it's developing, well actually I think it is all a symbol of the times, it's all representation of what is going on inside people.
Yes.
And this unrest, this disturbing element, this uncertainty, this never being able to think and see clearly, this let's live for the moment and hope for tomorrow, this sort of feeling that all the time, is it worth it? No one seems to want to put anything into anything or do anything very seriously, or if they do, they often, without realizing, create something which... quite frankly, invariably is pretty hideous.
Yes.
I think, actually, in some ways, I feel sorry for people. I mean, it's easy for me to stand here and say I feel sorry for people. I very genuinely do, but in so many cases, in so many instances, it's with the people themselves. The people are living too much within themselves and to themselves. Only people could think a little more outside themselves, not be so down self-centered. And quite frankly, their values are changing. I mean, even in the short life I had, I could see it. I realized it when I was on your side, that people's values were changing. And to some extent, I suppose it affects even the best people. I mean, even the nice people. So they get contaminated by it. And although they desperately try to have a really decent code of life and a nice sort of feeling about people in the world, even they get affected by it and start saying and doing things which are quite against their true character, and then they're horrified of themselves. It's like a disease, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, quite often one can say something that you regret very bitterly afterwards, but really people have created the situation so that you've had to sort of stand up for yourself and say something that afterwards you shed many a bitter tear about.
Mm.
But really other people are to blame, because one can't, in a sense, avoid it. And the whole society is becoming so... well, corrupt, really, in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's life. I don't know. I think possibly I would have been happier in another age. I think I would have liked the 18th century, although there's a lot of hypocrisy there, of course, and dreadful poverty and God knows what, disease, and medical science hadn't progressed very far, but there was something, I think, about, well, even Victoria's reign. I mean, people, at least generally speaking, I think they lived to a certain code. It may not necessarily always been a right one, but at least they did live like decent human beings. I think their outlook was different.
Well,
I mean, I don't know, it seems to me an appalling thing that the more man has and the better opportunity he has, the worse he becomes. I mean, I mean, look at this generation today. They've never had such opportunity in life, so many things presented to them on the plate, you might say. They've given everything, but things which at one time were considered great luxuries are now common usage. I mean, and yet people, and youngsters particularly, seem more criminally minded and more appalling in their manners and less consideration for each other and for older people. Manners seem to have gone to the wind.
Oh, it has. Oh, the old days, of course, we always talk about the old days, Victorian and Edward, King Edward days. They were lovely days.
In many senses,
kindliness.
Yes, I think in many ways that's true. Of course, he was a bit of a rogue, wasn't he?
Edward, oh yes.
Oh, he was a shocker. Gosh, he was really a shocker. I think if the world knew the whole truth about that man, I mean, I don't mean to sound kind.
No.
I suppose, like, in a man his position, particularly, he was weak.
Well,
I think he must have been pretty ghastly for Alexandra.
Oh, yes, poor old Alexandra.
She must have put up with a hell of a lot, you know.
Tough time of it.
Still, whatever we were talking about him for, anyway.
Oh, well, never mind. What about poor old Winston now?
Oh, well, he's...
He's
here. I mean, he's more here than there.
I mean,
it could be any second, of course. Actually, we don't expect him to get over this, naturally, and we think he'll be here, fully here, that is, if he's practically here.
Yes.
But he's more wandering, as it were, away from the earth.
And you think
he's on it, you know.
Yes.
Oh, I shouldn't think he could possibly hang on much longer, perhaps a day or so at the most, although it could be any second. Actually, he's really more out of the body than in it.
Yes, I think so.
Actually, it's not very nice, really. I mean, frankly, I think, although it's a shock for people, it's much better when a person comes really suddenly than to linger like that, even though they're unconscious for several days. At least the world says they're unconscious, the doctor says he's unconscious, but of course that's stupid, really.
He's half out, isn't he?
Well, the point is, they say they're unconscious, but they're not, you know. They are conscious, they're conscious of two worlds at the same time. They may not be fully aware, it's true, but it's as if they're drifting between two worlds. One moment they're conscious of things going on around them, and sometimes, of course, they can hear what's being said, and another time they're right off the beam, as it were, and they're more over this side. In fact, it's an extraordinary situation, because you're neither in one world or the other, you're in both almost at the same time.
Yes.
And he's very conscious of his people around him, people that he's known in the past, particularly his own people, relations, parents, and what have you, you see.
Yes.
And actually, it'd be much better to be released completely than to have this sort of in between the two, because it's disturbing in a way.
Very. I expect he'll have several to come and meet him.
Oh, goodness, he's had masses round him already. I mean, ever since he first became really seriously ill, before even he lapsed into what you term unconsciousness.
Yes.
Before the stroke attacked him, he was very much, in a sense, with us. He has been, although it's not been publicly known, he's been very much sort of in between the two worlds.
Mm.
I don't mean to say he's been exactly exactly unconscious, but he was sleeping a great deal, drifting, you know, sort of dozing, as you call it, but really it was nature's way, I suppose.
Gentle way of...
In a way it is, and in a way it isn't, you see. I mean, I can quite understand people saying, oh dear, I'm so scared of dying. I mean, I think the actual process of dying can be, in some cases, pretty bad. I mean, it depends, of course, on the illness and the circumstances, but I think a person who just quietly passes out in their sleep is jolly lucky.
Yes. Well, the trouble is sometimes even the doctors don't know. I've read of cases where they're in coffins and so on, and they're alive.
Well, of course, those cases are very rare.
Yes.
But, well, actually, of course, there are these instances where people don't fully die. They go into a state of unconsciousness, and to all accounts, they appear to be dead. That's one reason why I don't think it's a good thing for a person to be buried or to be cremated until about 4 or 5 days at least after death has taken place.
But they don't like that idea.
Well, of course, in places like India or hot countries, they have to...
Yes.
To cremate them or get rid of the body very quickly. But in a place like England, I think that a body should be kept at least 5 days.
Five?
Well, I should say 5 days. Mm. But it depends on the circumstances. I mean, I don't think that, generally speaking, I don't think it's a common thing. I don't know very much about this, really. I don't even know why I'm talking about it, except in that, from what I gather, that it's a very unusual thing for a person not to be really dead. Mm. I mean, doctors can, I think, be quite sure. That's why it's a good thing to have two doctors, I think.
Yes. Speak in a happy tone now.
Well, it is a happy tone in a sense, because passing out is the happiest thing that can happen to anyone.
Yes, I know.
It's a process, of course, that sometimes is disturbing. Mm. Anyway, what Marshall told me and what I know,
yes,
I don't think you've got very much to worry about.
Oh, I don't worry at all.
Good. That's what I like to hear.
I don't worry at all. I may be a little nervous, but
I think everyone maybe must be a little apprehensive. I don't see how anyone can be otherwise. After all, no matter what you may know, there's still a little of the unknown.
It's
in
like
a, in
going
a sense.
To a new place and you're wondering what it's all about.
I mean, if you could remember, for instance, many of your experiences when you come over here during your sleep, if you could have some remembrance of being here and of seeing and knowing, that would be a great help.
Make me remember.
Because you have some idea what you're going to.
Such a determined sort of man.
Well, I don't know you. It's very difficult, really. I mean, one can help, one does help, one tries to anyway, to help people recapture things, memories, and to give them some idea and some help, but it's not easy. I mean, some people have the ability, a natural ability, I suppose, is within themselves to hold on to memories of astral travelling and so on, others just lose them immediately on waking.
Uh-huh.
I suppose if one could sort of dot down on a piece of paper, a pad or something, immediately on waking, things that stick in your mind for that fleeting second.
I would put a pad and pencil on near my table. Because very often I do, not very often, but I do.
But if you could see, if you could actually see,
yes,
as I have seen,
yes,
around you at night,
yes,
especially when you come to, when you have really had a jolly good sleep, as you would call it, you know, you've been astral traveling, and I know there's sometimes as many as a dozen people. I mean, I've seen your mother, your brother, I've seen Marshall, I've been there myself, I've seen Frederick, I've seen innumerable people, many of them, of course, who are obviously connected with you way back when, you know,
yes.
I mean, people I don't know anything about, but obviously all people who have your welfare at heart, who take a great interest in you and come and see you from time to time. Some of them, of course, as you know, are regular, more or less communicators, but some I haven't a clue who they are, but they're obviously connected in some way with you. There's no doubt about it that you do spend a great deal of time over here doing your so-called sleep, and other times when perhaps you've just dozed off. It's an extraordinary thing that, again, you see, time is of no consequence, because it may well be that you've just dozed off only for a few minutes or 10 minutes perhaps, but you've been able in that short space of time to be released temporarily, that is, from the body, and being able to experience and know things appertaining to our life and being with people that you've loved and known, and they have brought you back. But see, the point is, time is nothing. What may seem 8 hours sleep, shall we say, to you, or what may seem 10 minutes sleep to you, in itself, it's not the time.
Mm.
It's the being able to be released and leave the body. And you can spend a lot of time here, and yet it is no time at all. You see, that's the odd thing about it. I find time a very difficult thing to assess anymore. Even when I come and talk to you, I mean, I haven't a clue how long I've been present, really. I assume that it must be somewhere, shall we say, within the hour, because I know by habit you sit from 9 until 10, roughly, and therefore I assume naturally that it's roughly an hour. But I couldn't tell you it was an hour, unless, of course, I saw a clock and the hand go round from 9 until 10. And we have no way of measuring time.
No.
It's very difficult, you know.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, it's only by the process of thought and the realization that we are expected to, or at least you anticipate that we should come at a certain day at a certain time. And because we're constantly, not necessarily only me, I mean, I don't perhaps come as much as others, but those whose job it is, like Mickey, or people whose task it is to be in constant contact with the medium, it is they who are able to assess time because of their constancy in being around and therefore able to arrange and organize. You know, although it doesn't always seem like it on the surface, even the bad or the worst sound, that is, the one that appears to have little or no value, even that tremendous amount of effort and work goes into it. I mean, in the anticipation of being able to make contact, in the anticipation of being able to get through and so on, even though it appears that nothing or little happens, it still doesn't alter the fact that a great deal has gone on in the attempt to get through, in the attempt to make contact.
Mm. Mm, I expect so. We've been sitting here very often. Although, you see, I have seen the room brighten up like anything, although we don't hear anything at all.
Well, I think this brightness, as you term it, I don't know that this is the answer, but I do think that when you get this intensity of light, or this tremendous sort of feeling, which I don't say it's electrical exactly, but it's the nearest thing I can say to approach it, but there is something that comes from us. When we, for instance, we're all grouped round here, we're all thinking and concentrating our thoughts on what we're trying to do, to achieve, to make communication. I think that sometimes there is from our auric emanation some illumination which pierces or lightens, if you like, the darkness of the room.
Oh.
In other words, you see, for instance, you and Leslie and everyone, for instance, who is on earth, although they don't know it, everyone has an auric emanation. It's illumination, it's not discernible normally to the naked eye, to the ordinary eye, but when you sit under certain conditions in a room which to you is dark, which is not dark to us, but it's dark to you,
yes.
Under certain conditions the intensity of our thought and the combined effort that we make and the intensity which we give to what we're doing, our auric emanation combined creates a luminosity which possibly becomes discernible to you, because actually, as I'm told, I don't know much about this, I'm only telling you what I've been told, that is that with materialization or partial materialization or indeed other forms of phenomena that may take place in the darkened sounds room, all this is something that is very real and very creative, because all mediumship, from what I can gather, is a creative thing. In this sense, you see, you have to accept the fact that whenever we make contact or communication, in a sense, we are doing something which, although in a sense is basically natural, because that is that we are anxious to make communication, we're anxious to be in touch with people we love, in other words, we're doing something naturally from ourselves, yet the creative part of it is, in a sense, because we are dealing, that is, with material things which we are, in a sense, no longer connected, in a sense, therefore, must be artificial.
Mm.
I don't know if you follow what I'm trying
yes,
to get.
I'm
you see, for instance, I speak to you.
Yes.
All my effort, all my thought, and all my intensity of being is natural in what I'm endeavouring to do. But the effect that I may create, because I have to make use of certain substances and certain conditions which may be prevalent at the time of communication, in a sense, it has to be artificially stimulated or produced in such a way that you are conscious of, after all, what is communication but being conscious of the attempt of another individual on another sphere, on another vibration, making communication, making themselves aware to the people concerned on the earth. In other words, it is in a sense registering something from our vibrational atmosphere on a lower range or lower rate of vibration, so that it has become something, at least for the moment, something tangible. In other words, we are tangible in our own conditional vibration, but when we come into your world, to your way of thinking, or to your knowledge, to the average person's knowledge anyway, we are not tangible. But when we can communicate in the sound room, we endeavour to become tangible, and we endeavour to become reality,
yes,
even temporarily for the moment. That is why the voice, which is artificial in a sense, is fundamentally natural, but in the reproduction of it, it must be to some extent artificial. And so much depends on the conditions, so much depends on the varying factors which contribute. And sometimes, when the conditions are extremely good, there can be, with the intensity of our thought and being, a tremendous luminosity that must pierce the darkness of your world. Because that's exactly what we are doing. Whether we're doing it by our voice, that is, by creating a sound so that you hear us, or whether we are in some other way communicating, whether it's the materialization or the movement of a table or the banging or the knocking or the luminosity that may come with the intensity of our thought and being in the attempt to make communication, it is all, as it were, piercing the darkness, you know.
Yes, but what puzzles me even now is when people come and speak to me, I recognize, if I've heard them before, I recognize each voice that comes.
Well, I think that's in a way rather understandable, because although they may not be able to reproduce the identical voice that they may have had when they had a physical body and walked normally and naturally in your world, because
yes,
they were part of it,
yes,
you see, they were then, of course, obviously living under normal and natural conditions, and they were manifesting themselves. Although they were spirit, they were manifesting themselves in a natural way through a natural instrument, that body, in a world which is natural and real to them. But the point is that when we come, we have to take what we can from the conditions that are prevalent, and we have to do the best we can at that moment to transmit by the thought force, chiefly, our personality and our identity. And I think that we do that on a certain level. And I think it is normal, actually, for us, more or less, that it should be on that level at most times. There may be times when it may vary a bit and it's much more difficult or we can't communicate, but I think it is that we do get on a certain level, and therefore what we reproduce must be on that level. It may well be, of course, that sometimes, for some reason or other, conditions may be so exceptional that we can reproduce ourselves even more so as we were when on earth. But generally speaking, I think that you will find that since we all have to use the same voice box and we all have to use the power that is predominantly from the medium, so therefore when one considers that the main force or power or vitality or whatever it is that is most essential to communication comes from the one person, no matter what others may contribute, it still falls back on the one instrument or the one medium, and therefore it must be, I think, generally speaking, on a certain level, even at the best of times, though there are exceptional times, it's true, and I think that we get into the way and the habit of exerting ourselves on a certain level, and the voice follows suit. I think that we reproduce something which is of ourselves,
yes,
under certain conditions which to some extent must be limited according to the medium or the mediumship, and I think that you'll find that the voices must to some extent fall into different categories. I really don't see how it can be much else.
Oh.
It's difficult. Of course, there are exceptions to this. I mean, I've seen it, I've known of it, even the short time I've been coming. All of a sudden, you'll get a tremendous burst, a tremendous force and vitality and power, and a person will come through full of personality. Their voice will be charged with personality, and then perhaps it will lose itself, it will drop. Or it may be that another personality is standing nearby, waiting their opportunity to speak, perhaps, or for that matter, maybe helping the person that's already speaking, and you'll get a sort of weird mixture, a merging of personalities.
Oh, yes, yes, I've had that.
You know, I don't see how, frankly, that can really be avoided. You see, we must always bear in mind that the sensitive, this sensitive instrument, I didn't mean the medium, although he is the instrument of the sense, but the instrument that is built from the instrumentality of the medium, in other words, the voice box or the sensitive area. I think that would be a much more correct word, expression to use, because there is a sensitive area in the medium's aura which makes it possible for us to communicate. And once we are within that range or within that condition of that sensitive area, then we can, and often do, of course, become audible, or we become recognizable to you. Mm-hmm. And if another person, even unintentionally, and very seldom do they do it intentionally, happens to pierce or get in the way, then you get a mixture of two people.
Oh, but I still recognize. You still recognize the voices.
Oh, yes.
The different voices, I mean.
It's very intriguing and very interesting because, you see, a seance is never static. You see,
no.
What we've got to bear in mind is that no seance of any consequence, as it is a seance, it is ever static. It's all the time motion, movement, change.
Yes.
It's always fluctuating. It is vibration all the time, and the vibrations are never still. They're always moving. They
yes.
must be. That is, indeed, after all, what is life but vibration?
Yes.
If we cease to vibrate, we cease to exist. We cease to be. It is constant friction, constant vibration that is life. That is the essence of life. All the time in the world in which we are, it is all vibration, but vibration on a much higher rate, and a much more sensitive condition, and a much more evolved and mentally spiritual vibration too. Because all this depends on the individuals, all this depends on the individual approach, the individual knowledge, the individual understanding,
yes.
and so on. The whole thing is so subtle, and in a sense so simple, and yet in a sense so complex. But the more we begin to realize the truth of these things, I speak for myself, I begin to realize how, in spite of many things that still cause me some, well, not necessarily concern, but puzzle me, I realize that fundamentally everything is natural law. And though it's difficult always to understand or appreciate, one gradually begins to see and understand how very real and natural it all is, and that it is all vibration, that it is all human in a much wider sense than one can ever hope to explain, because although we retain our character and our personality and our individuality, and we are separate one from another, we are so conscious of each other, we're so conscious of how we respond, how we are a sort of part of each other. It's an extraordinary thing, because here you cannot escape from this. On earth, to some extent, I think possibly you can. I don't mean to say that here that you want to escape from people. I'm sure we don't, and we certainly can't. But we do have our own individuality, but at the same time, it's a much wider feeling, it's a much sort of broader a sensation that one has. One doesn't feel confined, one doesn't feel that one wants to keep oneself to oneself, and yet one has one's privacy, if you need it, if you want it, and you can take on and do the things that appeal to you, and yet all the time you feel that when you're expressing yourself, that in some miraculous way you are, in a sense, expressing other people. I don't know how to put this, but at the same time you're part of other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful feeling, a glow of warmth that you have, of being. It's this extraordinary thing, this sort of feeling that you are of something that is so real, so vital, so charged with power, so charged with love. You know, there's no sort of feeling of well, selfishness of any description.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Yes, I understand what you mean, Stephen.
Terribly difficult to explain.
What a lovely existence, my goodness.
Well, all I can say is this, that I don't think, in fact I feel sure, that no one who has endeavoured to do their best, as best they could, according to their light, need have any fear or qualms about passing over. And even those who haven't lived as they might have lived, in fact done many things they should not have done. In fact, people who are so-called sinners, or people who perhaps in themselves have perhaps not always been, well, kind or helpful. In what I'm trying to say is, of course, is that no one is really ever lost. It's true that it's more hard for some than others, and of course there are many who have many regrets and often wish that they could undo the things that they've done. But over here, everyone, No one is denied. Everyone has opportunity. Everyone has the realization within themselves that they can achieve and they will achieve, and that no one is lost. No matter how low or depraved or whatever it is they may have become, that they are still fundamentally part of each other, they are all important.
Mm.
That there is no such thing as being a lost soul in the sense that you're eternally lost.
You've always got your own kind around you.
Oh yes, one naturally, I think, is to be expected that one does in the early stages of coming here enter into a vibrational condition of life to which you are best suited or adjusted. And I think that's wonderful, because it would be dreadful for a person, for instance, to be set in a condition of life to which they were unsuited, in which they were felt uncomfortable, in which people around and about them were so different in so many different ways that it wouldn't be a happiness for them at all. And of course we all have to go through experiences which sometimes are not easy, but the point is that we learn, and we learn to appreciate many things. No matter how we may have failed, there is the realization that opportunity is there to try again and again, and that we are being helped, and no one is denying us. In fact, everyone is endeavoring to help us, although nevertheless it still depends on us individually. But the way is there, the opportunity is there, and if we want to take the helping hand that's offered us, then we can take it and be helped. Of course, there are some who won't accept a helping hand. There are some who are, in their own minds, prejudiced and difficult to appreciate and understand, and who think that they are right and others are wrong. Even when they first come here, they cannot visualize anything other than what they themselves want to visualize. You see, I think the most terrible thing of all is for a person to have a closed mind on earth, especially when they come from your world to this, and they cling to outworn ideas and creeds and dogmas and things like that, and they really believe that they are different from the rest, that they are even much better than the rest. The point is that it's not until we really are humble and we really realize how little we know, how inexperienced we are, and how much we have made of our lives, and how much perhaps we have failed in our lives. In other words, we've got to truly assess ourselves, be honest with ourselves. And so few people are really honest with themselves. Of course, eventually when they come here, they have to be. But it's very hard for some people to face up to themselves. I think that's why it's so important, when one is on earth, to be honest with oneself, to face up to oneself, to realize that there is so much that is good in the worst of us, and so much that's bad in the best of us. You know, in other words, we've got to be truthful, and we've got to accept ourselves and try to see, all from the other person's point of view, see perhaps where we have made a mistake, not to be so sure. I think one of the worst things that one can be is to be too sure about almost, you might say, anything.
Oh, one can't be sure about anything.
One must always be delving, one must always be searching, searching within oneself, and searching outside oneself. And where religion is concerned, of course, one must always have an absolutely open mind. That's the only way you can hope to make progress. It's the only way that you can hope to find what commonly in religion is called salvation. Because it is the searching for truth that brings you salvation. It gives you release. It gives you your realization of what is and what is not. But to mildly to accept something just because it's common to accept it, or because it's dictated and you're expected to accept it, to be correct and to do as others do. In other words, you must all bow the knee together in rhythm. It's stupid. I mean, the point is that one must be an individual, and the only way you can be an individual is to have an open mind.
Of course you can.
Anyway, I must go.
Well, thank you very much.
Actually, I didn't know if we were going to do very well tonight, because frankly, you know, I don't think you're quite up to the mark. I don't think the medium's too good either.
You...
But,